Now we're holding on page 126 in Tinus Os Mem Dalin. The Mishnah mentions among the various cases where you start fasting, the serious fasts right away and saying Anenu, Alekenu, Anenu, and so forth. One case the Mishnah describes is where you have, where there's rain in some places and not in others. So the Gemara and the Mishnah quotes in that connection a pasuk from the Novi Amos that mentioned Vim Tauti al Ir Echas. Hashem says, I made it rain on one city, while Ir Echas Loy Amtu, and on another city nearby, I did not make it rain. We learned back in the first parak that, and then the Gemara mentions over here also that it means that actually both of them are meant in a, or it comes out in a bad way. You would think at least the city that has rain is well off, but no, what it means is the city that's getting rain is getting flooded, and meanwhile the other one is dry. So therefore, both of them are ending up in a bad situation. So that leads the Gemara into a digression of, on the other hand, we have psukim that seem to be saying something negative, but really we can find a positive message. So one of them is, Pasuk says in Eicha, Hoysa Yerushalayim l'nida b'neiha. Yerushalayim was like a nida among them, among the nations. Why like a nida? Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, livracha. It means there's actually a bracha implied. Kenida, it means the Jewish people are like a nida. Man nida yesh laheter. A nida is also for a while. We have these days in three parakim of Rambam, all the dinim of it. But a nida is also to her husband for a while. But then eventually she becomes tahor and she's muta to her husband. After Yerushalayim yesh la takana, the same way Yerushalayim is not a goner, it has a takana. Things are going to get fixed up. The Jewish people are going to do tshuva, and the Eibishter is going to bring Mashiach, and everything will be back the way that it should be. Marsha points out, now you have an earlier pasuk, a few pasukim earlier in Perek Aleph of Eicha that also uses the word l'nida, al-kein l'nida ha-yosa, but there Rashi actually explains there that it means l'nida meloshen nava-nav, that they're wandering around. But here l'nida b'nehem doesn't sound like it means wandering, it seems like it's meloshen a-nida, and therefore that's the comparison. Iyun Yaakov also points out, you know, again, we have in Shlosha Perakim of Rambam, these last couple of days, the dinim of Nida and Zava. We know that a Zava needs a certain number of clean days. Nowadays we always consider all women are Zavos, and therefore they always need seven clean days. But Minat Torah, a Nida doesn't need any clean days at all. Just she has to wait till the end of the 7 days, and then she totals. A Zava Ketana needs one clean day, and a Zava Gdola needs seven. So if the comparison was to a Zava, it would mean there'd have to be a certain amount of time between when we do tshuva and when we have the Gula Amitis Vashlema. Like this, by comparing to a Nida, the implication is there doesn't need to be any wait at all. B'shaita chodo, b'riga chodo, we do tshuva, and that moment Mashiach can come. Another example also from Eicha, Hosa Ka'almana, in the first pasuk over there, where it says Yerushalayim is like a widow. Again, Amar of Yehuda, Livracha, here also there's an implied bracha in here. Ke'almana, doesn't say Hosa Almana, Hosa Ke'almana. They are like a widow, meaning V'loy Almana Mamish, we Jewish people are not literally like a widow whose husband passed away, rather it's like what's called a living widow. Her husband has gone away to a faraway country, and he intends to return to her. It's the same way Hashem has temporarily hidden himself from us, but nevertheless he's still there and ready to resume his relationship with us as soon as possible. Marsha also adds the point that an almana would actually be allowed to marry somebody else. On the other hand, an eshes ish is fully entitled to use her husband's nechassim. So therefore, we're like an in-between state. On the one hand, we can't marry anybody else. We can't chas v'shalom give up Hashem and start taking on some other religion or some other avodah zara or whatever. On the other hand, we're also not fully able to make use of everything that Hashem puts for us in the world, because that's the sort of in limbo state that we're in. And we're waiting on a constant basis. We never know. This woman in this mashal never knows when her husband is going to show up. The same way, we never know. We don't know when Mashiach is going to come, but we're constantly eagerly awaiting it, just as much as she's constantly awaiting for her husband to come back. Marsha also points out in Sanhedrin, this Gemara is also in Sanhedrin, Marsha points out the idea behind it is like this. The nations of the world, you know, the 70 nations, they get their hashpah through the 70 sarim. Well then, when the Tsar is knocked down from his perch in Shemayim, then there goes the nation, they're goner. On the other hand, we don't have a Tsar. Well, we have Malach Michal, but he's more our defender rather than that we get our hashpah through him. We're connected directly with the Eibishtan, non Nosiv Malka. Therefore, since the Eibishter never disappears, therefore neither do we, so we can never be, they can be, in other words, like an actual Amana, and there are psukim that refer to Goyish nations as becoming an actual widow, because their sar is gone, and therefore so are they, as opposed to were only kelm on it because of that. Another example of a pasuk that seems to say something negative, but Rabbi Yehuda finds a positive angle in it. The Navi says, "V'gamani nosati eschem nivzim u'shvalim." Hashem says, "I've made you Jewish people are mocked and lowly. That the goyim consider you a nation worthy of mocking and a lowly nation." So Amar Rabbi Yehuda levracha. There's a bracha hidden in it. The goyim, therefore, the goyish rulers do not appoint us Jews, loy reishi nahari, not the chiefs of rivers, meaning back then most trade and transport went by rivers or canals, and they would charge tolls for the merchandise that's passing through. So the toll collector was called reish nahara, was called literally the head, the chief of the river. Now, as you can imagine, people who are traveling on those kinds of river highways, they resent those toll collectors. So therefore, so by us, the fact that they consider us lowly and unimportant, they don't want the kings. Therefore, Marshall explains, actually, the pasuk continues, the kings themselves don't consider us lowly and contemptible. They consider us honorable. They would want to appoint us to important positions in government because they can recognize the value of Jewish brains, but they realize that their subjects, their citizens, consider us lowly and contemptible, and therefore that they wouldn't pay any attention to us. So it's a bracha that we don't end up getting appointed to those kinds of positions that are going to breed resentment by the goyim, that they're going to be resentful that we're collecting tolls from them. V'loik ziripati, and similarly, they don't appoint us as police. Who are Rashi says, and then Tosfos adds, these are people that enforce the law with sticks. So again, as you can imagine, there's a lot of resentment against them. Look at all the anti-cop protests nowadays. So it's a bracha that they consider us lowly and contemptible, or that the regular people do, and therefore the kings and the ministers realize there's no sense in appointing us to such positions, because those such positions need to command respect. And they realize a Yid is not going to command respect from the goyim for that kind of thing. But that way, it avoids that, it doesn't breed anti-Semitism. Another example of a pasuk that says something negative, and we also find something positive in it. The Navi says, this is the story in Sefer Melachim, at one point after Yeravam has become king, and he set up the Egle HaZahav and introduced Avodah Zarah into the kingdom, and so on and so forth. So at one point, his son becomes sick, and he tells his wife to disguise herself and go to the Navi, Achia Shiloni, and ask him for a nevuah, what's going to happen to the child. Meanwhile, the Eberstedt and Achia is blind also. He wouldn't even be able to recognize her. The Eberstedt tells him that Yeravam's wife is coming. Don't be fooled by her disguise or anything. And he gives him a long, harsh nevuah to tell her what's going to happen to Yeravam and his family, and what's going to happen to the Jewish people because of their aves. So he uses the pasuk, he uses the expression, Vehika Hashem es Yisrael, Hashem will strike the Jewish people, like the way a reed sways in the water. So on the face of it, it seems like a klala, that we're going to be tossed back and forth, the way like a reed is tossed back and forth over there by the winds and the waves. But there's a bracha implied in it also. And how do we explain that? For that, we need a little background. What does it mean? A pasuk says in Mishlei, "Ne'emonim pitzei oyev." The wounds of a loved one, of a beloved one, are faithful. V'naptoros neshikos soynei. On the other hand, the kisses of an enemy are naptoros. Now Rashi translates naptoros as meaning the opposite. Rashi actually gives two explanations. One is that naptoros means, like the word eser means a pitchfork that you use to turn over the grain. And for that reason, the Gemara mentions in a couple of places that tefillah is called asira. We find by some tzaddikim, we find by Yetar Yitzchak LaHashem, by Yosu LaHashem, because a tzaddik's tefillah is compared to a pitchfork, just like that, turns over the grain, the same way a tzaddik's tefillah turns over Hashem's zeres. So one explanation of naptoros over here means overturn, means the opposite. When a friend wounds you, in other words, he's doing it for your good. It's ne'monim. He's trustworthy and he's faithful that he's doing it for your good. On the other hand, v'naptoros, on the other hand, the opposite, the polar opposite of that, is neshikos soynei. When an enemy kisses you, on the face of it, he's doing something very nice for you. He's kissing you, but really you should realize it's the opposite and it's to your detriment. That's Rashi's first explanation. The second explanation is that naptoros means like overburdensome. The word naptoros can also be related to a word for a lot. So it means like there's so much of it that it becomes burdensome. In English, you have a word, you have a good word for it, fulsome. Like it's so full, you get so full of it, like that you're sick of it. So Natoris, and actually second explanation is it means something like that, fulsome. Tosfos brings those two explanations, and then Tosfos says another possible explanation, and the simple meaning of the pasuk is fakert. What it means is when you have two people who were friends all along, and now they start hitting one another and they start hating one another, then you know it's nemonim. You know it's a faithful thing, it's a reliable thing. They're on the outs and they're not gonna make up so easily. On the other hand, v'naptoris neshikis sone. On the other hand, when you have two people who were enemies and now they make up and they kiss one another in friendship, then you know it's naptoris. You know that it's meaningful. Also, now the word notorious, it's a lot, meaning it means a lot, because now it means up until now they were on the outs and now they're making shalom, so you know that it's going to be much stronger. Al derech hakehav, the Rebbe talks about in any number of sichas, when you have a relationship that was in difficulties and then they make up, it becomes much stronger for having gone through all that experience. So that's the notorious nishik saying. Anyway, the Gemara is going to dash in over here as follows. The curse that Achi Ashiloni gave the Jewish people in this pasuk from Malachim that we just quoted about, that they're going to be like a reed constantly bent back and forth in the water, that klala, that seeming klala, is better. Yosemit bracha sheberchan Bilam Arasha is better than the bracha that Bilam Arasha gave to the Jewish people. Achi Ashiloni killed on the corner. Achi Ashiloni, how does he curse the Jewish people in his nevuah? He said they're going to be like a reed. Now let's consider, on the face of it, it's a negative thing that we're saying, like a reed, which is not able to be stable. It's constantly being bent back and forth and by the wind. Nevertheless, we have to consider, the reed grows in a place full of water because it grows in the swamps and in the margins of bodies of water, like you have, for example, when Moshe's basket was put in such an area with reeds. So it always has a supply of water to nourish it. The gizoy machlif, its stem regenerates. If you cut it, it will regrow. The shosh of merubin, it has a lot of roots. So even if all the winds in the world come and blow on a reed, they don't move it from its place. It moves back and forth. It sways back and forth with them. It looks very fragile, but nevertheless, it still withstands all of them. And eventually, when the winds quiet down, then the reed is still surviving it all and staying where it is. So kach Yisrael oimdim mamayim haTorah. The Jewish people then are standing in the water of Torah. Imhen goylin, even if they go in golus, this is not in the Gemara. This is only in Ein Yaakov. He's ehen machlifin. Their trunk, their stem constantly regenerates. The Jewish people, even people have thought over and over throughout history that this is it. The Jewish people are goners, and yet we always regenerate. But oisken baTorah, and we're constantly renewing and are renewing our relationship with and our involvement with Torah. The shorish of Merubin, and our roots are many. Even throughout all the vicissitudes of all the four Goliaths, from all different directions, they never move us away from the power of Torah. In fact, now this seems to be a gloss. This seems to be an explanation that somebody wrote in the margin of their Gemara, and then it got incorporated into Ein Yaakov. But in fact, Marsha, in the Gemara, this Gemara is also in Sanhedrin. Marsha explains over there the four ruchos represent, in fact, the four Goliaths. Each of them is based in a different cardinal direction from Eretz Yisrael. Bavel in the north, Paras and Madai towards the east, Yavon towards the west, and then Edom is in the south of Eretz Yisrael. So each of the four directions represents one of the four major Goliaths. So the point is, no matter how many winds blow on a corner, nevertheless, it still always withstands them. Avo Bilam Arasha Berchan Be'eretz. On the other hand, Bilam Arasha, on the face of it, blessed the Jewish people, but he blessed us to be like a cedar tree. Shenema Ka'arozim Alemoyim, as he says, that he compares us to cedar trees that grow by the water. Now, Ma'eretz Ze'ena Oimed B'makom Mayim. Now, a cedar tree does not necessarily grow where there's water. What about the Ale Moyim and the Pasuk over here? Rashi explains, Bilam himself only said, Ka'arozim. a malach was there, and the malach interjected Ale Moim. We have Rashi explains, based on the Gemara and Sanhedrin, that there were a number of phrases that Bilam uses in his bracha over there, where he means them as something negative. And part of when we say that Hashem overturned Bilam's curses and made them into brachas, is that part of that was each time he said something which can have a negative undertone to it, then a malach comes and corrects and says that no, it's like this with the positive. So the same way, he says ka'arozim, meaning they should be like cedar trees, which, as we're going to go on to say over here, are very inflexible when they break, and that's the end of them. But the malach adds, ale moyim, no, they're going to be by water. They're going to have a constant supply of water. So the cedar tree in and of itself doesn't necessarily grow in a place of water. The in gizoy machlif, its trunk does not regenerate. You chop down a cedar tree, it's not going to regrow. Mind you, the Gemara actually mentions there are a bunch of different trees. We learned in Masechta Rosh Hashanah, there are a bunch of different species of trees that go under the general name of Erez. So some of them, the trunk does regenerate, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, but the actual cedar per se does not. The Ein Shosh of Merubin, it doesn't have so many roots. So Vafilu Kolaruchas Shabbat Olam Noshvus Bay Ein Ha'olach. So first of all, Vafilu Kolaruchas Shabbat Olam Noshvus Bay, when all the winds blow on it, it does not. It's not flexible. It doesn't bend back and forth with them. So on the face of it, you're going to think, okay, well, it can withstand all the winds. But then the south wind, which is a particularly strong wind, comes and blows on it. Then since its roots are very shallow, it uproots the tree, and knocks it down on its face. So the same way Bilam meant to compare us to, Marsha explains there in Sanhedrin, again, the Ruach Dremis represents Edrim, so he meant to say, fine, the Jewish people can withstand Golus Bavel and Paras Modai and Yavon, but he's looking forward to that there's going to be a Golus Edrim, and that's going to be the end of us, Chas V'Shalom. So therefore, his ostensible bracha is really a cloak. As opposed to, again, Achiyah Shaloni's ostensible klala to compare us to a reed is really a bracha that the reed is constantly blowing back and forth with the wind, but after all, it withstands all of that. You have a famous song, Sukkala Akleina, that expresses this idea of the many places where we have this point. Veloy oid, not only that, the Gemara continues, Elisha Zocha Kon. Not only that, the reed has a special schus, little himenu kumus. You take from the reed, you take a pen, lichted by Sefer Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim, where the books of Tanakh are written with pens made out of reeds. Ada Yamazes, Sfardish Sofrim, use reed pens for writing Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzas. Ashkenazic Sofrim at some point switched over to quills. Why? I don't know. Maybe reeds of this type didn't grow in Europe and the places where they needed them to. Marsha adds, in other words, the point is, the metaphor is like this. Therefore, the cedar tree, when it gets knocked down, as we just said, what can you do with it? There's nothing you can do with it. All you can do is use it for firewood. It's a goner. As opposed to the kone, even usually we're saying it doesn't get uprooted by the wind. But even if somehow it does, nevertheless, it still has an afterlife after that. It's used to write Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzas. The same way, even if we Jewish people are torn out of where we are by the winds of Golos, nevertheless, we still have our constant connection with Torah. So therefore, that's what we're saying. That this Akasha Yonu Nakonu B'mayim, which seems such a harsh Nevuah, there's really a beautiful Brach. And the Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan, another difference between a reed and a cedar tree. La'olam yehei adam rach kakone, in that connection, a person should always be flexible like the reed and then go with the flow, and not obviously not when it's talking about not when the goyim are trying to prevent us from Yiddishkeit, but we're talking about, in other words, as far as getting along with people. Ba'al yehei kosha ka'erez, rather than being inflexible and not ready to be moichel people like a cedar tree.
Husband
and wife is an example of that. Yeah. So there has to be that. There has to be that flexibility. And in various places in Chassidus, it talks about part of that is b'pnimiyus inyanim. You know, you have the seven midos, Chesed through Malchus, and we know that in Kedusha, each of them incorporates all the other. This is in today's Tanya, actually, that ever touches on that point. So there's chesed shebe chesed, but there's also chesed shebe gvura, and gvura shebe chesed, and so on and so forth. Each of them, unlike in Olam HaToyhu, where each one is its own independent thing, and they shatter in Olam HaTikun and Kedusha, they all incorporate each other. That's included in this rach kana, that a person should have his midas, should be flexible, and chesed is not an inflexible chesed, but it has in it a component of gvura and of tiferes and so forth, and the same thing with all the others. Maisa Shabbara Balazi Rab Shimon Mimigdog Dur Mi Base Rabbi, and it happened in this connection that Rab Balazi Rab Shimon, or the different views of the other way around, Rab Shimon Ben Elazar, anyway, it was one time he was coming from Migdog Dur, the name of a place, someplace in the north of Eretz Yisrael, Mi Base Rabbi, he was coming home from his Rebbe's house, he's riding on a donkey, he's walking along, he's strolling on the bank of the river, and he was very happy that he was coming back from the yeshiva so full of Torah learning. So he was feeling a little full of himself. Because he learned a lot of Torah. So he's happy with it, and he's feeling a little full of himself. Look what a great Talmud Chacham I've managed to become. All of a sudden, he met up with somebody who was very ugly. Now, Rashi and Tosfos both bring that Yesh Omerim, that it was actually none other than Eliyahu. And Eliyahu wanted to give him a lesson, as you have the rest of the story over here, to make him realize that this is not the way a Yid should be thinking and feeling. We'll talk about at the end of the story that Rebbe has an amazing explanation about it. Anyway. So he says to Rabbi Lazar, or Rabbi Shimon, according to whatever the Gir says, whatever, he says to him, Shalom Alecha Rebbe. He didn't answer him with Aleichem Shalom. Ion Yaakov points out that in Eretz Yisrael, in those times, we find it mentioned in the Yerushalmi, the usual way of doing things was a less important person would not volunteer a greeting to a greater person. Like he would have such a pachad and such a yira for the greater person that he wouldn't feel that he has the break type to even address him. If the Talmud Chacham or the greater person were addressing first, then he would respond. So here, when he's initiating the greeting, Shalom Alecha Rebbe, then Rabbi Lazar felt there's something wrong with the way he's acting. He has a lack of derech eretz. So instead, Amalei, he says, Reka, you empty person, kama machur oisaish. Look how ugly that person, meaning you, is. Shemakol b'nei ircha mechu'arin t'moscha, or maybe all the people in your city as ugly as you. Now, how could he say such a thing? So we'll get to soon what the Rebbe explains about it. But first, we have Marsha explains that, first of all, he looked like a kushi. He looked ugly and black. Are you just like a one-off, or is everybody from where you come from like that? Ion Yaakov explains that since we know there's an expression in a pasuk, chokhmas odam tor pono, the wisdom of a person makes his face shine. See, a lot of times you can tell by looking at a person's face, you can get a certain idea what kind of person he is. It's obviously not foolproof, but a lot of times you can tell a person who's involved in chokhmah has a different kind of expression on his face than a person who's not. So here, when he saw that the way he looked like he was never involved in chokhmah at all. So therefore, that's why he calls him Rei. And again, because he sees that he has a lack of derech eretz as well. So therefore, yeah. In fact, an explanation about the Shema Kol Bnei Ircha Mechu'arin is also that he's saying that after he says that, he catches himself. You know what? Maybe it's not only your fault. Maybe it's just you come from a place where everybody is like that, and therefore you never learned better. Anyway, Omalei, so the guy answers, Eini Yodea, I don't know whether everybody where I come from is like I am. Ela Leich Ve'emur La'uman Sha'asa'ani, go and tell the craftsman who made me, which is the Ebishter, Kam Mechur, please Eshal Sisar, how ugly is this Keli that you made? Marsha says, in other words, what the guy is answering is, you're asking me whether everybody where I come from is ugly. I don't know, I don't really want to say that, because I don't want to talk badly about creatures of Hashem. You're saying Kam Mechur means, in effect, you have no problem attributing imperfection to Hashem and saying that Hashem made an ugly cave. So therefore, fine, go and tell Hashem that. As soon as Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon realized that he had done wrong by talking to the guy this way, that he had, and in effect, yeah, like Marshall says, he had insulted Hashem by saying that Hashem made something by making something ugly and imperfect. Ion Yaakov points out another point as well. One, when the guy answered, I don't know, that itself is a mark of chokhmah. A person should say, I don't know, because then that way he doesn't end up being shown up as a liar. So therefore, he realized the guy does have derech eretz. So therefore, now he felt bad that he had talked to him this way. So Yorad Menachamur, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon got off his donkey, even a shateach upon him, and he bowed down, he prostrated himself on the ground in front of him. But Amalei, he says, Na'anesi loch, I've spoken too much against you, Na'anesi Meloshan Aniyah, like I've spoken up against you. Mechuli, please be Mechuli. And the guy answers, "Any moichaloch ad shetelach l'uman shasani. I'm not moichal you until you go to the craftsman who made me. The emolay tamam achur klizesh al sisa. And tell him how ugly is this keli that you made." Again, according to Rashi and Tosfos, the vote is this guy is actually a Yohan Novi in disguise, and he wants Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon to learn the lesson once and for all. So now Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon is walking and following the guy until he reached his city. When Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon reached his native city, the townspeople came out to greet him. Shalom alecha, Rebbe, Modi. Amalahem, the ugly guy says to them, Lamiatam Kodim, Rebbe. Who is this over here that you're calking with these exalted titles, Rebbe? Omrullah, they said, Lazesha Matayalach Aracha. This guy was walking behind you. Amalahem, he says, Imzer Rebbe, if this is what you call a Rebbe, Al Yubu Kamosa Bisrael, may there not be more like him among the Jewish people. Omrullah, Mikmei Mad, they said, why? Why would you say such a thing? Amalahem, Kach Vakachal. So then he tells them what Rebbe Elazar ben Shimon had said. They said to him, Afal became Mecholoi, fine, you have a right to not be Mecholim because he insulted you and implicitly he insulted the Eibishter as well. Nevertheless, be Mecholim, go to Nimashar Sedin and be Mecholim, Sha'odim Godu Batorah, because after all, he is a great Talmud Chacham. Omulahem, so the man says, Bishvilchem harini Mecholoi, fine, for your sake, I'm going to Mecholim. Ovilvad, Shalayahe Rogil Lassus came, as long as he's not accustomed to doing this kind of thing. Now, what do you mean, not accustomed? Are you ever allowed to do such a thing, to put down a fellow yid like that? So Maharsha says, what it means is, what the man is, no. Don't act in a way that's going to bring you to do like that. What led Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon to talk to the guy like that in the first place is because he said, Vahoysa daita gasa, all of them, he's feeling a little too proud of himself. So now the guy's saying, don't be roga lassus kain. Don't get yourself in that frame of mind in the first place, that's going to bring you to talking to people harshly like that. Miyad Nichnas, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon v'Darash, right away, after the guy was Meichel, him, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon went into the Beis Medrash and taught what we just said before, La'olam yehe'odim rach ha'kana, a person should always be flexible like a reed, ba'aryeh kosha ke'eres, you shouldn't be hard and inflexible like a cedar tree, meaning that I was acting more like a cedar tree, expecting that everybody has to be on a certain level and not, and instead it's better to be flexible like this guy who after all was Meichel. Now, with all the explanations that we said, there's still a little bit of a question. What was going on over here? What was Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon thinking to talk to that guy in the first place? There's a sicha in Chelek Chof where the Rebbe discusses as follows. Where the Rebbe starts the sicha talking about, we know famously Avraham Avinu had guests coming from all over the place. And we know after they ate and drank, he would ask them, he would tell them, you should bench Hashem. And some of them would willingly, and others of them would say, no, what Hashem, Vu Hashem, Ver Hashem, you're the one who gave us food. We should be thanking you. And Avraham Avinu says in that case that I'm going to charge you high prices. After all, it's in the desert. You can't easily find all these things over there. And then like he almost like blackmails them into thanking Hashem. And then they say, you know what, we're better off that than having to pay a huge amount. So they never talks about it. I mean, what, you're blackmailing people into thanking Hashem. What's the good of that? So the point is, so the Rebbe develops the point in the Sicha. In this story, we have something. The point is that Avraham Avinu wants to evoke by them. I mean, after all, they are Brios. They are creations of Hashem. Sometimes that knowledge, that realization that they're created by Hashem is very deeply buried by a person, and you have to kind of force it out to them like Avraham Avinu did with his blackmail. But nevertheless, you still have to do it because it's still buried in there. Here, when Rabbi Elazar sees this guy who's Mechor B'Yoser, and again, like Ion Yaakov is saying, his outside reflected his inside, then Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon couldn't even see on him that he even had any realization that he's created by the Eibishter. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar figured he has to give him like a shock treatment. He has to tell him harsh words in order to get him to realize that he's created by the Eibishter. What happened was, though, the guy's first reaction is Leich Emer L'Uman Shasani, meaning right away, it wasn't that deeply buried. So then Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon realized, oh yeah, I made a mistake. I thought that it's so deeply buried, I need to schlep it out of him with that shock treatment, and it turns out I didn't need to. And then that's the rest of the story. And therefore, when the guy says at the end, Ovad shalei rogel lasis kain. So again, what do you mean rogel? Are you ever allowed to do that? And Maharsha is saying it means don't act in a way that will lead to that. The Rebbe's point of it is no. The guy is saying, I understand. Sometimes there are sometimes people you have no choice but to use that shock treatment on, like Avraham Avinu did with some of his guests. But lo yehi rogel lasis kain. Don't make a regular practice of it, because most people, even people who are as mechor and as ugly on the inside and the outside as me, nevertheless there are gentler means by which you can get them to recognize that they're creations of Eibishter, as was with me that right away I said Uman Shasan. further on, the Mishnah talks, the Mishnah goes to, on to talk about, I forgot to mention at the beginning of the Perek, by the way, our Perek is nicknamed, they have a nickname for our Perek, Pirka de Chassidim, the Perek of the Chassidim, because we have all these, the whole Perek is full of these stories of great Tzaddikim and great Chassidim. We had Nachdimin Ben Gurion yesterday, we had Rav Loz, we have Rav Loz Ben Shimon here, we have Rav Ada Ba'ava and Rav Huna. We're going to talk about great Chassidim Va'anshe Maisa, so the Perek is nicknamed Pirka de Chassidim after that.
And the whole thing sounds like Pirkei Avos.
In a way, it's kind of like a Gemara equivalent to Pirkei Avos, in a way. So, the Mishnah talks about one of the cases where you fast and dive into the Eibishter for Rachamim is where there are houses and walls collapsing without obvious cause. So either it could be because there isn't an obvious cause, namely there was an earthquake. But the point is, these aren't weak buildings that were rickety in the first place. And we're not talking about, let's say, they're near the river where the current could be undermining them. We're talking about perfectly seemingly normal, healthy walls, and all of a sudden there was a bunch of them collapsing in the city. So then you fast and you dive into the Eibishter to save the people from that. So that brings the Gemara into a discussion and into the following story. There was a shaky wall in Nahouda. Rav and Shmuel, who lived in Nahouda, and Rav, who used to visit there regularly, would never walk next to this wall. Even though it had been standing there for 13 years and had never fallen down, they were always concerned today it might punct fall. One time, though, Rav Ada Ba'ava visited over there, visited Nahouda, Amar Shmuel, the Rav. So now Rav was also visiting there, apparently. So Shmuel says to Rav, Nasi Ma'avinakis, come, let's go the long way around and not pass by that rickety wall. Let's go our usual detour. Amalei, but Rav answers, Loit Srichna, we don't need, Loit Srichna Ha'idna, today we don't need that. We have Rav Ada Ba'ava with us. The nefishas chusei, his chusim are tremendous. So I'm not worried about. The derech hateva, yes, you walk by a wall, you might get hurt. But there are some people that are completely beyond teva, and therefore Rav Ada Ba'ava is one of them. And therefore, I know that he's not going to. The Eibishter is not going to allow the wall to fall on him, and therefore we can walk that way as well. Tosfos, by the way, points out there are at least two Rav Ada Ba'avas in Shas. Elsewhere in Shas, you have Rav Ada Ba'ava, who was a Talmud of Rav. This is a few generations later. He was a great tzaddik and Talmud Chacham in Rav and Shmuel's time. So it's an Uli. And the Gemara tells similarly, Rav Huna havalei chamra bahu beis dehavriya. Rav Huna had some wine. Actually, chamra could be chamra wine or chamora a drunk. Whatever it was, he had it in a certain house, Dahavasuriya, where the house was rickety. Boila Fanuile, he wanted to get the wine or the donkey out of there, and he wasn't sure that they could safely get it out before the place collapses. So he used the same thing. Ila Rab Adaba'ava Lahosam, he brought Rab Adaba'ava in there without telling him why. Mashka Rab Adaba'ava Bishmaitahosam, and he got him involved in a deep discussion of Torah over there, Adapanye, until they were able to clear everything out. Busted enough after they left, Nuffle Besa, then the building fell down. Again, in the schus of Rav Ada Rav Huna knew, the Eibishter is not going to allow the building to collapse on a great tzaddik like Rav Ada Ba'ava, and therefore he figured he could use his schusin for this purpose. However, Argish Rav Ada Ba'ava realized what had happened over here. The building collapsed only after he left the Ikbad, and he was angry about it because. Like this, his schusim had been used for such a thing. Savalaki hod Rav Yanai, meaning he held like what Rav Yanai says. The Amr Rav Yanai la olam al yamin at adam atzmei makam asakana v'yom sha'osin lo nes. A person should never put himself in a dangerous situation and say that Hashem will do a nest for him. Shema einosin lo nes. Hashem might not do a nest for him, and then he's going to be responsible for his own death or injury or whatever. The im tim tzoloima osin lo nes. And even if they do a nest for him, nevertheless, the Beis Shemayla is going to deduct it from his schosim. And after all, you have, so first of all, there might not be a nest because Shema Yigram Achet, meaning Rav Huna took the view of Ada Ba'ava as a tzaddik gomer, and he's beyond all these things, and therefore there's nothing to worry about. Rav Ada Ba'ava thought of himself, he's at most a tzaddik she'enin gomer, and therefore they might have Shema Yigram Achet. And even if a nest is done, then it's going to be deducted from his schosim. Amar Rav Chanan Maikra, where do we have a pasuk that expresses that point? Dichtiv, Yaakov says it himself, I become smaller because of all the chesed and everything that you've done for me. Meaning, Amar Yaakov, Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Misyare Ani, I'm afraid, Shema Al Nes Shata Oisali, because for the nisim that you're going to do me, for that you're doing for me, Atam Enakim Mischuyosa, you're deducting from my schosim and imtesi cotton, Mikolach Sodim and Mikolach Emes, and the result is, because of all your chesed and all your emes, I now become smaller. So Rav Adam Abba was concerned about that. My have uvdin of Adaba Abba. What did Rav Adaba Abba do that was so special that Rav Huna could consider that Rav and Rav Huna could consider him to be such a tzaddik gomer that he's b'chlal beyond anything of nature? He had the itmar, as we have, we learned this in the Sefer Megillah. Shalot Talmidim, I said Rav Adaba Abba, b'meher rach the yomer. Rav Adaba Abba's Talmidim asked him, with what schusim did you live long? Actually, in Megillah, we had over there that were the two different versions. One was Rav Zera, and the other was Rav Adaba Abba. You in the printed Gemaras, it also has both of them, but in the Ein Yaakov, it has just Rav Adaba Abba. Anyway, so Omalahem, he tells them, mi yomer like habti b'seich besoy, I was never angry in my house. Now, even you have times, there are sometimes a person does have a necessity to be angry in his house when something was done that's dangerous or whatever. I should at least display anger, even though, as the Rambam points out, I shouldn't truly feel anger, but he wouldn't even do that. He went with Nimshur Sadin. I never walked in front of somebody who's greater than me in Chochmah. Now, you're not allowed to do that. You have, the Gemara mentions in Yuma that when you have three people walking, the Gadol, the greatest one, should walk in the middle, and the other two walk a little bit behind. The point is, Rav Adaba Abba was saying, I would take the extra care, not even one single footstep that I would take in front of someone who's Gadol Mimen. Ben Yehoyada also adds, even if I'm older than the other guy, still I wouldn't. The loy who houti mavoy samatun office. I never thought of words of Torah in filthy alleys, one that have human waste or smelly animal waste in there. Now meikur adin, you're not allowed to think Torah in such places, but you are allowed to walk in them. And inevitably, a tamad chacham like Rav Adaba Abba, it's hard for a person to control his thoughts. And on the face of it, of necessity, is going to end up thinking. Nevertheless, he says, I was extra machmer on myself to not even think a little bit of Torah. I never walked four amos without words of Torah and without tefillin. So meaning, yeah, when I'm walking in such places, then I have to walk four amos without Torah, but otherwise not. Anaf Yosef over here brings a fascinating explanation from Rav Lev Yitzchak Berditchever, that the deeper meaning of not going without tefillin, without Torah and without tefillin, so we know we praise Hashem, and Hashem's tefillin demora al maksibu, praises the Jewish people. So it means, in other words, that he's saying it's always one or the other. Either I'm always talking in praise of Hashem, which is represented by tefillin, or I'm always talking in praise of the Jewish people, which is represented by Hashem's tefillin. So in that sense, I never went without four amos, without tefillin, either praising Hashem or sticking up for the Jewish people. Very appropriate for the Lev Yitzchak, of course, to say such a thing. Anyway, I never slept in the Beis Medrash, not a full sleep and not even a nap, even though, again, in principle, a Talmid Chacham is allowed to take a brief nap over there. Nevertheless, he was machmir on himself. Right? I was never happy when a fellow Yid stumbled. Now that could be, obviously it would be a bad midah to do that. But we mean, even for example, sometimes it's a natural thing. Somebody else made a mistake on something and you got it right. It's natural to feel a certain satisfaction. He didn't. And Ben Yoyoda adds also, for example, let's say somebody ended up selling something for cheaper than it should have been, and he therefore had a loss and you're actually gaining from it financially. Nevertheless, he's not happy. I never called a fellow Yid by Chachinose, by a nickname. That would be, for example, a derogatory nickname or even a neutral nickname. Others say, even if it's a family nickname or a last name or something, I would call people by their proper names. So Marsha, but he explains most people are nichshol in these things, even though many of them are also me'ikra din, but many people are nichshol in them anyway. He's saying that he was careful to never be nichshol in them. In Megillah, Marsha pointed out a little differently that it means that even in cases where it would be mutter, he's still machmer on himself and goes the extra mile not to do that. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGa'olah, Yud Ches 7. We know Chazal tell us, and the Rambam brings up the halacha at the end of Hilchos Megillah, that all the Sforim of Nevi'im and Ksuvim are going to be bottled Limos Mashiach, except from Megillas Esther, as opposed to halachas of Torah Shabbat Peh, which are never going to be bottled, like Chamisha Chumshei Torah, meaning when we talk about the eternality of Torah, and you know it's one of the Rambam's Ikrim, that the Torah is forever and there's never any changes and reductions and so on and additions and so forth. That includes the halachas of Torah Shabbat Peh, meaning the explanations of what the mitzvahs are, through which we know how to fulfill the mitzvahs. Those are also part of the eternal Torah. Continuing in halacha, we're talking about the Dalad Rishuyis of Shabbos. We talk about Rishus HaYochid, Rishus HaRabim. So next is Kamelis, is a place where not so many people go and it's not properly surrounded by mechitzas. Examples are fields or river or rivers that are at least 10 tefachim deep and at least 4 tefachim wide and dead-end streets. Places where people sit in front of their stores and sell things. Counters that are in there that are in Rishus HaRabim that have a certain size and so forth, various kinds of things like that. There's all kinds of things that are considered a Karmelis. The idea behind Karmelis is it means it's something that's neither here nor there, Rachmol, neither soft nor hard. So it's like an in-between kind of thing between Rishus HaYochid and Rishus HaRabim. So therefore it's a midrabban and you can't move anything from it to Rishus HaYochid or to Rishus HaRabim. On the other hand, a Karmelis you can surround with an Eruv. That is how, for example, you have able to have an Eruv in a bungalow colony, for example. You definitely don't have Shishim Riboy over there, so therefore that's not a problem, as opposed to in city streets, like I was mentioning yesterday. Those are in our cities nowadays, those are Rishus HaRabim, and therefore nothing doing as far as an Eruv over there.
What's happening, paradise, all of a sudden? It's a very good question,
considering that our Rabbanim have said pretty clearly, going back as far as I know, at least to Rabbi Dvorkin, maybe even further back, that no Eruv is possible over here. They have finished. I don't know.
You don't know any better.
Yeah, people don't know any better, and yeah, it's beyond my pay grade to talk further about it, but yeah.